Now, did you watch A Charlie Brown Christmas at some point over the holidays? Did you watch it multiple times? In its two airings on ABC last month, more than 9 million viewers tuned in to see Linus explain the true meaning of Christmas by reading from the Gospel of Luke.
"You shall find the babe wrapped in swaddling clothes, lying in a manger. And suddenly there was with the angel a multitude of the heavenly host praising God and saying, Glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace, goodwill toward men."
What is it about Charlie Brown and the rest of the Peanuts gang that has people coming back for more? It's not just the big holiday TV specials, but the 18,000 daily comic strips as well. More than 30 well-known writers and artists, including Jonathan Franzen, Janice Shapiro, and Ira Glass, talk about the ways Charles Schulz's creations affected their lives and careers. Those sentiments make up a new book called The Peanuts Papers, Writers and Cartoonists on Charlie Brown, Snoopy and the Gang, and the Meaning of Life. Andrew Blauner is the editor of the new book. He's founder of Blauner Books Literary Agency. His other anthologies include Coach, Brothers, The Good Book, and more. Andrew, thanks a lot for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me on.
This was a long-running comic strip. A lot of people, myself included, grew up on it. Why do you think Peanuts and Charlie Brown and Snoopy have had this enduring popularity?
Well, first of all, I'm stunned from the previous segment that there are 600 types of cheese being made in Wisconsin. I say that sitting here in the middle of Midtown Manhattan, and full disclosure, I'm a recovering vegan. The secret of the Peanuts success, that was part of my agenda in putting this book together. It was to try to find some answers to that, because here we are 70 years removed from the start of Peanuts in 1950, 20 years removed since the time we had an original comic strip, because that's when Charles Schulz died in 2000. And there is something unquestionably transcendent, timeless, democratizing about it, starting from presidents from Obama to Reagan down to people at the local bar or barbershop. It seems to be something that people who maybe don't agree on anything else can agree that they love Peanuts. And within that, different people have their own affections and alienations and antagonisms about it. So I don't think there's any conclusion other than it begs a question of whether we're kind of in a new Peanuts moment. And I know we're talking to people in the Midwest, in Wisconsin, and people have sort of theorized on whether it's a coincidence or not that there is kind of a renaissance of interest in Schulz and Peanuts and also in Mr. Rogers. And they're both Midwestern guys who created these iconic, anthemic worlds that people many, many years later are still endeared by, learning from, and engaged with. So it's still a bit of a mystery, but it's a charming, life-affirming one, I think.
A running theme from a lot of the contributors to this book is that Peanuts wasn't light and funny and happy in many cases. There was a melancholy. Charlie Brown often starts the strip by saying, "I'm depressed." And he really is. He's dealing with depression and anxiety, and so are the other characters. What about this kind of bleak landscape captured us?
I think the notion is that there was something, because people have said, well, it was actually, to what you're saying, people said, well, was Peanuts actually kind of dark, especially for a comic strip? And Chris Ware, who created Jimmy Corrigan, among other things, you know, said in one of the panels related to this book, said, you know, "I'm not sure it's about being dark so much as about being real." That until Peanuts came along, comic strips were mostly kind of populated by grown-ups who were acting like children. Here, the entire universe and the entire population of the strip was children, no grown-ups. Somebody pointed out that Snoopy is the only one whose parents ever actually appear in the strip. But there's no question about it that there's a melancholy to it, and there's probably no question that that's not coincidental with the fact that Schulz himself – you know, suffered from being melancholy himself. But, you know, one of the themes is unrequited love. I mean, everyone is in love with somebody who basically doesn't love them back, which is, Schroeder and Lucy and Sally and Linus and Charlie Brown and the little redheaded girl. But, you know, the themes of life is hard and people are difficult. But the flip side of that is, you know, perseverance has its value, and there's joy, you know, Snoopy's joy and wonderment. And for every disappointment, There's redemption. And, you know, if Linus is in the pumpkin patch, and you mentioned the TV specials, which was obviously a lot of people's gateway, if you want to call it that, to the world of Peanuts, you know, was Linus sitting in the patch waiting for the great pumpkin? Was that an act of faith, or was that naivete? I was struck listening to that intro you played of how much Linus in that great soliloquy sounds almost exactly like my 5-year-old son. Anyway,
yeah, and it seems like as you mentioned, this is kids acting like grown-ups. In a way, this could be a safe place in a culture that maybe didn't want to talk about our individual mental health. We could see it lived out and tackle our own issues by watching these kids with big round heads.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I mean, Charlie Brown, you know, never got a Valentine's card, excuse me, which I learned in the process of putting this book together engendered mass number of people actually sending Valentine's cards to Charlie Brown,
right,
through the Schultz office. So yes, it gave children, I think, a lot of, I mean, it was all sort of unconscious. I don't think as kids we were sort of having this conscious thought, but it kind of validated our lives and the meaning of our lives and the experiences that we had. There's also the element that it wasn't actually constructed and contrived to be something for children. It was Peanuts was, you know, put together by and actually Schultz, as many people may know, he detested the title Peanuts. He thought,
right,
it was demeaning. You know, he would have just assumed call it Charlie Brown. And if you asked Schultz, you know, in his private life, you know, what is it you do? He said, oh, I draw that strip with Charlie Brown and Snoopy. He wouldn't even say the word Peanuts. That's how strongly he felt against it.
Talking to Andrew Blauner, editor of the new book, The Peanuts Papers, Writers and Cartoonists on Charlie Brown, Snoopy and the Gang and the Meaning of Life. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Tell us the role Charlie Brown and his friends played in your life, maybe your favorite character. We asked around here at WPR. Jennifer Dargan, network assistant director, says, I love the way they did the voice of the teachers on the TV specials. It really connected with me as a kid, how I felt about being on a totally different wavelength than adults. And adults appear very close to almost never or to never in the strips. They don't even have a voice in the specials. This is just the kids. What was up with that, Andrew?
Well, it's funny. The a lot of people love that sort of teacher voice in the background. And Rick Moody, who's in the book, who's probably best known for writing The Ice Storm, has a great phrase for that. I think he calls it the trombone voice, mm-hmm, sort of offset. This was a rare case of where it was all, I mean, and also you had no idea how old these kids were. I mean, and their parents were not around. They didn't really even have much furniture. You didn't know. They were obviously in suburbia, but we didn't know where. You know, a lot of it was about friendship and about getting along and about cruelty, obviously, with Lucy. And, you know, Ronald Reagan was on record that his favorite part of the whole strip was the, you know, Lucy pulling the football away from Charlie Brown. And people asked Schultz, well, couldn't you have just let him kick it once? And he said, no, it wouldn't be as funny or wouldn't keep people's interest. And then the gag would be over.
Now, let's talk about the art a little bit. Very minimalist. But a couple of the cartoonists in your book, and I've seen this elsewhere, they say, you know what, as simple as it looks, it's really hard to fake. You can't draw these kids like Charles Schultz did.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's funny. The book that I put together before this one was about the Beatles. And there's sort of an analog there that I think a lot of people grew up, you know, singing or playing an instrument and thinking, how hard could it be? And the drawing, you're right. Charlie Brown, Snoopy, there is a simplicity. I mean, there's a paradox to Peanuts. There is a simplicity, yes, to the art and to the drawing and also to the characters and the storyline. At the same time, it's complicated and the drawing is not replicable not nearly as much as it seems to be. And the storylines and the characters obviously have a lot more depth and complexity than you might think on the surface. But yes, I made a conscious effort to include several cartoonists writing prose in this book. There are no Peanuts strips themselves reproduced in the book, but there are some artists who have written strips, original strips of their own, but also written contributed essays. And it was fascinating to read their accounts. And somebody like a Chris Ware says, every cartoonist in the world owes a debt to Charles Schulz. And some people would go further than that and say we all, those of us who've loved it and learned from it and grown from it, owe that debt.
A lot of people, just briefly, a lot of people, not just cartoonists, engage in your book very seriously with the meaning of Charlie Brown. This is clearly in some ways more than a comic strip, right?
Well, yeah. And one of the surprises to me, one of my apprehensions going in was almost that, oh, everybody's going to write about Snoopy and how much they love him. and that was far from the case. In fact, I had no idea of how much – it wasn't a backlash, but like a lot of people thought that Snoopy was a narcissist and that, you know, toward the latter half of the strip that it just became too much about his Baroque behavior. And on the flip side, I can't say I was aware of how much love there is out there for Charlie Brown and how many people, identified with him.
We're talking to Andrew Blauner. He's editor of the new book. It's called The Peanuts Papers, Writers and Cartoonists on Charlie Brown, Snoopy, and the Gang, and The Meaning of Life. His other anthologies include Coach, Brothers, The Good Book, and more. This new book out looking at Charlie Brown and Charles Schulz. We asked our WPR colleagues about Charles Schulz and the Peanuts comic strips. Morning show producer Colleen Leahy says, I can recall from memory a comic that illustrates perfectly why I love Peanuts. Linus is looking at his hands, marveling that human hands have made brilliant compositions, sculptures, and written books. Then Lucy says to him as he's looking at his potential-filled hands, they've got jam on them. And marketing director Jeffrey Potter says, maybe what I appreciate most about the strip is that I find nuances in the punchlines and storylines that have changed meanings for me depending on where I am in my life. As an adult, I can relate to Charlie Brown on so many levels. You can chime in with your favorite Peanuts comics and how they've affected your life. Join in at 800-642-1234. Is there a particular comic strip that you've held on to for one reason or another? Which Peanuts character is your favorite or the one you relate to the most and why? Have you learned lessons in your life from the Peanuts gang? Do you share the comics and specials with your kids and or grandkids? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll be back with Andrew Blauner and take your calls. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation now about how the Peanuts comic strips helped shape American culture and the lives of some well-known writers and artists. Andrew Blauner is our guest. He's the founder of Blauner Books Literary Agency and editor of the book we're talking about, The Peanuts Papers, Writers and Cartoonists on Charlie Brown, Snoopy and the Gang, and the Meaning of Life. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you a Peanuts fan yourself, a Charlie Brown fan? Which character can you best relate to? Do you have a favorite comic strip that you remember? Maybe you still have it clipped or up on your computer. Have you learned a life lesson from Charlie Brown, Snoopy, and the rest? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Connie is with us in Portage. Connie, hi.
Hi. I'm 80 years old, and my roommate in college is in West Virginia, and we've kept up all this time. I just sent her a Snoopy and the Gang Christmas card that's musical. She sent me a wooden music box where it's the doghouse and Snoopy's laying on the top looking at the sky. And we went to a girls' college, and lights were out at 10 o'clock. And we would take flashlights under the blankets and read all the comic strips of Snoopy in
there. Wow.
And my favorite is when Snoopy was lost in the grass. And he would jump way up high, and then he'd scream, and he'd jump again. That was always my favorite. But I like Lucy, too.
Connie, thank you so much for sharing that story. Andrew, when you kicked off this project, did you have people kind of coming out of the woodwork to tell their Charlie Brown stories?
I love that caller's story. And by the way, I do want to mention that the publisher of the book deserves a lot of credit. That's the Library of America. Mm-hmm. And also, just to answer your question, to go back to the genesis, I met Schultz 20 years ago in 1999. And I didn't realize at the time just how unusual it was to get an audience with him. It was like meeting the Wizard of Oz. And once we were able to get the project, get a publisher for it, to your question, yes, people started coming out of the woodwork, as you say. And again, apprehension, if you can call it that, was that there would be a homogeneity to it, that everybody would be writing similar stories. But wow, was that not the case at all? Because there's a piece about the music and the soundtrack. There's a piece about Sally. There's a lot about there's something about Franklin and Pigpen. I mean, and it's not just all character studies. But yes, there are people like Ann Patchett in the book who says that probably she would have never become a writer had it not been for the strip. And for a lot of people, Snoopy was the first writer, and we forget somehow that he was a writer. Snoopy was unpublished, but it was a dark, stormy night. That's where he started.
Connie, thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. Andrew, you met Charles Schultz. I hear that he was not a glory-seeking kind of guy, a person very self-effacing. Is that something that matched up with your impression of him?
Completely so. I wrote him a letter in 1999 asking him, total shot in the dark, whether he would consider actually writing something for another book I was working on behalf of somebody else. And he wrote, I expected just a form letter at best, and instead I got this personal note saying he was declining writing for this other project, but if I ever find myself in Santa Rosa, California, please stop by. And I thought, are you kidding? Like the next day I started planning a trip to happen to put me in Santa Rosa, California. And yes, absolutely, positively, his humility and humanity and sort of gentle humor, coupled with the melancholy and sort of existential angst that he had, was completely endearing and disarming and consistent with what we knew about him before.
Let's go back to our callers. Marilyn is with us in Washburn. Marilyn, hi.
Hey, hi, Robin, Andrew. What a fun book to look forward to. Mm-hmm. And Andrew, you just mentioned Santa Rosa, and that's what I'm calling about. I live in Washburn, Wisconsin, but I've gotten to go twice to that wonderful museum, the Charles Schultz Museum that's out in Santa Rosa. And it unfortunately did not actually finalize to become open until after his death. But it is all things Charlie Brown and the gang. And there are original sketches. There's his whole drawing table is there. And I just wanted to give a shout out about that's such a fun place to go for people who really love this. And an example, there had been a sketch about Christo and covering mm-hmm. Snoopy's house mm-hmm. as a Christo, and mm-hmm. then Christo actually covers a doghouse, and it's out there in the museum.
Oh, wow.
It's a Christo art piece. So there's just lots of fun things at that museum, and I can't wait to get a hold of your book. So thanks.
Thank you, and amen to what you said. I was fortunate enough to be out there at that museum for the first time. We did an event with Jonathan Franzen, actually, and it is everything you just described and more, and well worth the trip.
Marilyn, thanks for that call. We're talking to Andrew Blauner, editor of the Peanuts Papers, writers and cartoonists on Charlie Brown, Snoopy and the Gang, and the Meaning of Life. You can join in with your Peanuts memories, your Charlie Brown fandom moments yourself at 800-642-1234. Back to your calls now. Mark is with us in Bloomer. Mark, hello.
Hi there. One of the things about Charlie Brown cartoons for me was that, a lot of us guys resonate with Charlie Brown. I was a Charlie Brown, and reading those cartoons, it was like reading, somebody who understood my life. Mm. And just saying, this Charlie Brown ended up happily married with kids, having a good job, so it worked out.
But Mark, it sounds like you found some comfort in somebody who's gone through, Charlie Brown, who's gone through some of the same struggles you were?
Hey, people pulled the football out from underneath me many times.
Okay. Mark, thank you. I'm glad things turned out well for you. But a lot of people identified, and you were saying this, a lot of people were fans and maybe identified, Andrew, with Charlie himself.
For sure. I it was a surprise, but it was a pleasant surprise. I just thought everybody loves Snoopy. Everybody, has their personal favorite. But but I just had no idea how many people not just had affection for Charlie Brown, but really identified, and people you might not think so much. And it was interesting because Schultz was on record as saying, of all the characters, if they had actually been real and grown up, who would have been the most likely to have sort of a happy, healthy, normal life? And he actually said it was probably Linus. But I think the people, other than Snoopy, the character that people most identified with was certainly Charlie Brown.
Our colleagues, thanks for that call. Our colleagues identified it a couple more. Jana Rose Schleiss, morning show producer, says she loved Lucy. She realizes now it's because Lucy was loud and bossy and unapologetic. Schultz didn't make them seem like bad characteristics, an important thing for a young, loud, and sometimes bossy Jana Rose to see. Let's talk about the character of Lucy a little bit. Is that somebody that among your contributors grabbed their attention much?
For sure. I'm glad that came up because God help us if we left Lucy out of what she would do to us. But you know, we forget, too, that this was created – you know, written largely in the 50s and 60s. And Schultz, you know, he had a lot of – Lucy was a very strong, independent, say, woman, a little girl, 4 years old, some people would say, who happened to have, you know, a psychiatry practice for 5 cents. But, you know, one person's, you know, bossy and difficult was another person's strong, independent, inspiring character. And one of the contributors in the book, Peter Kramer, who's a brilliant writer, wrote Listening to Prozac and several other bestsellers. I think for a lot of people, it was his introduction to that world of psychology, psychiatry, and therapy, and what that means. And Lucy's advice, you know, which in the book, it's sort of debated, not directly, but whether or not she gave good advice. I mean, her advice to Charlie Brown was snap out of it. Which, you know, some people have said that's what he needed and that was good for him. But that was the other surprise, actually, in addition to Charlie Brown, of like how many people connected with and actually respected and admired Lucy.
Let's bring on John now, calling from La Crosse. John, hello.
Hey, how are you doing today?
Good. What did you want to bring up, John?
Well, I want to echo just what you were saying, because I grew up as a young boy, as with many baby boomer generation members of the 1950s and 60s, and I didn't think it was wrong or unusual at that time for me to identify with a young girl, even though I'm very much a man, to empathize with everything that Lucy was going through, because I grew up actively listening to people and coming from theater. I'm a stage manager, so I would learn how to tell people to snap out of it and to also actively listen to people when I needed to. And so I didn't think there was anything wrong about her being assertive or aggressive. It was just a way that many people, both boys and girls, men and women of the baby boom generation, saw that in order for them to become who they wanted to be, they had to snap out of it or assert themselves. Nothing wrong with that.
John, thanks for the call. Some more life lessons from Lucy there, Andrew.
For sure. And I'll just take the opportunity, since that caller mentioned being in the theater and stage manager, that I also learned during this process that the production of You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown is by far the most produced musical in American history. And the number of productions is at 40,000.
Wow.
And counting. And that over 250,000 people have in one form or another been in a production of You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown. And there's a new national tour that has just started this month.
We're talking, thanks for that call, John. We're talking about what we've learned from the Peanuts comic strips with Andrew Blauner. He's founder of Blauner Books Literary Agency. He's editor of the new book, The Peanuts Papers, Writers and Cartoonists on Charlie Brown, Snoopy and the Gang, and the Meaning of Life. Still time for you to join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a Peanuts memory? Do you have a favorite character you want to throw into the mix? Call in now at 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation with Andrew Blauner, editor of The Peanuts Papers, Writers and Cartoonists on Charlie Brown, Snoopy and the Gang, and the Meaning of Life. It includes 33 reflections by well-known writers and artists, including Sarah Boxer, Ira Glass, Leslie Stein, and Ann Patchett. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Did you grow up with Charlie Brown, Snoopy, and the Gang? Are your kids growing up with it? Are you passing it down from generation to generation? Do you identify with a particular character? Call 800-642-1234. Before we go back to our callers, I did a bit of reporting in the last couple of minutes. Our own Michelle Good, our technical director, her dramatic credits include Sally in that production of You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown in her high school days. Back to your calls now. Bruce is with us in Kenosha. Bruce, hi. Bruce, are you there? I think we lost Bruce. Let's try Gene with us then in Elkhorn. Gene, hello.
Hello, how are you?
Good. What do you want to tell us about Gene?
I wanted to tell you about how peanuts became kind of a common language for six kids and our parents. We all read it. We all read, you know, reread some. We actually had some books and things like that. So we had the common knowledge. And when someone is making a sandwich, if you got a knife out towards it, it was like, no, don't cut it, fold it over, otherwise all the flavor leaks out. And the piece where Lucy says, has five good reasons, I use that on my younger brother a lot.
Uh-oh.
she folded in her fingers and made a fist. And, another one we loved was when Linus and Lucy stood there and said, we're brother and sister and we love each other. And Charlie Brown said, you're not going to fool Santa Claus. And they go, why not? We're a couple of smart kids, and he's an old man. And, you know, obviously all those quotes, the quotes have stuck with me forever. And when I went through my mom's stuff after she passed away, I found dozens of clipped out Charlie Brown and Peanuts cartoons. She just valued it. It was like a philosophy for our family.
Fantastic.
It was something we shared with each other and still do, for that matter. I bet I could talk to my younger brother right now and say, hey, I've got five good reasons. He'd know exactly what I meant.
Gene, thanks a lot for that call. I think a lot of people have that sort of family connection, bonding over the Peanuts, Andrew.
Your caller put it, I agree. She put it so well, the philosophy for family and the common language. That's exactly sort of the message, in a way, that's something that, again, whether it was also like the Beatles or the Bible, some of the subjects of the other books that are put together, that in an increasingly, you know, polarized world, that, you know, it's to be cherished that there are things that we can have in common. And this is at the top of the list. So that's really touching to hear that from your caller.
Gene, thanks a lot for that call. That reminds me, one of your contributors, novelist Rick Moody, wrote about, speaking of the family connection, how his daughter took a quick liking to a Charlie Brown Thanksgiving. He wrote that the special took on a lot of familiar Peanuts themes but had some poignant moments. For example, after Charlie Brown's Thanksgiving feast goes down badly, Marcy cheers him up. Here's a listen.
I don't feel bad for myself. I just feel bad because I ruined everyone's Thanksgiving.
But Thanksgiving is more than eating, Chuck. You heard what Linus was saying out there. Those early pilgrims were thankful for what had happened to them. And we should be thankful, too. We should just be thankful for being together.
So I brought up some of the darkness in Charlie Brown earlier, Andrew, but that's an example of what you brought up, too, that there's redemption and connection in it, too.
Oh, God, yes. I mean, that's just so sweet, isn't it? and Rick's piece, you know, a lot of people, you know, obviously the Halloween special and the Christmas special get sort of most of the attention and affection. But the Thanksgiving, you know, which is in between, and Rick writes about something that I think a lot of people experience, which is maybe they had their Peanuts life when they were kids, and then it goes away for a while. And then when you have kids of your own, you re-experience it through their eyes. And I think Rick mentioned his daughter is basically addicted to the Thanksgiving special to the point that I think he's seen it 149 times.
We again asked around WPR. Morgan Stewart, our administrative coordinator, says, I'd love to hear from listeners and the guests about the characters of Franklin and Pigpen. How are they perceived by people when they first saw them? Morgan says, are any listeners aware that Franklin was the first black Peanuts character? And do they think, as I did when I was a child, that Pigpen was dirty because he was poorer than the rest of the gang? Any thoughts on Franklin and Pigpen, Andrew?
Well, that's an important point. Franklin, the same way that Schultz was sort of ahead of his time a little bit in making Lucy, for example, a strong, independent female character, He absolutely was the first to have an African-American or black character in a comic strip, and it was as a result of a letter that he got from a school teacher in California in 1968 or 69 suggesting that he do it. And Schultz was sort of notorious for if you suggested something to him, it was a surefire thing he wouldn't do it because everything sort of had to come from his own mind. But he made an exception for this, and I think a lot of people benefited for that from that. And one of the contributors in the book is Jennifer Finney Boylan, and she writes about sort of a group or a class of the characters I think she sort of puts under the umbrella of outsiders. And in there is Peppermint Patty, who's arguably a lesbian, Franklin, Marcy, Pigpen. So again, the fallacy is that it's all about Charlie Brown and Lucy and Linus and Snoopy. But, you know, he had a good bench there.
Let's go back to our callers now. Deborah is with us in Brown Deer. Deborah, hi.
Hello. Let's not forget Woodstock. when I was growing up, I had a Snoopy bedspread, a Snoopy, a Peanuts wastebasket, Snoopy and Peanuts sheets. I get cards every holiday are Snoopy cards. And I took a picture and sent them to you, but it would be Snoopy dancing, and he would have his neck up, and he would be smiling, and it said, "Keep smiling. It makes people wonder what you've been up to."
Deborah, a big Snoopy. I also had the bed sheets and a pillowcase, I think, and I remember drawing pictures on a big piece of paper of the house that lived underneath Snoopy's doghouse, because at some point he describes this huge, basically underground mansion, things like that. Thanks, Deborah. Some people, as you thought, some people really do have that Snoopy connection, Andrew.
Well, yeah, and Snoopy also in that doghouse had a Van Gogh and I think an Andrew Wyeth painting, and actually Schultz clearly had an issue with that because people would – Schultz, you know, I don't know if it's a Midwestern thing or it was his melancholy or insecurity despite all the fame and success, because there was a certain point where people were heaping too much praise on him, he'd say, yes, but I'm no Andrew Wyeth. but the Woodstock thing is funny too. When I got to meet Schultz, for some reason, one of the questions I asked him was whether Woodstock was male or female, which to this day, anytime I've mentioned that to someone, they think it's a ludicrous question because he was so obviously male. But I don't know. I'm still not totally convinced.
Did Charles Schultz have an answer?
He didn't. He sort of hedged. I asked him that, and I asked him what was Franklin's last name, and he didn't know. And I said, well, if you don't know, then nobody knows. And then afterwards it became Armstrong, actually, because we knew Brown and Van Pelt and some of the other characters' last names.
Back to our callers now. We've got Marcus with us in Milwaukee. Marcus, hi.
Hey, so I have pictures up in my kids' room now that hung in my brother's in my bedroom when we were growing up, that hung in my dad's bedroom when he was growing up. And they're these, they're on fabric, and it's, you know, different colors, and there's just a single character with a little, you know, like speech bubble above it. And so you have Linus saying, "No problem is so big or so complicated that it can't be run away from." And then you have one with Snoopy, you know, with his fist in the air on top of the doghouse that says, "Curse you, Red Baron." And one with Charlie Brown sitting on the curb and says, "I developed a new philosophy. I only dread one day at a time." But, you know, that whole familial connection. And one of the other things about the specials, I really like the one where Snoopy is up flying against the Red Baron, and then the Red Baron forces him down, and then they sing Christmas carols.
Marcus, thank you so much. So great memories there. And he's decorating now his kids' room, Andrew.
Exactly. And again, my kid who's five and to whom the book is dedicated, Sam, he has a Snoopy pillowcase, which he'll be putting his head on hopefully in the next hour or two.
Thanks for the call, Marcus. Just a couple minutes left. Andrew, there was no question after Charles Schultz passed away that anybody else is going to do this strip, right? Some cartoonists, there's a succession plan. It was done with him.
Exactly, for sure. And not only that, but Schultz made it clear during his life that he really wasn't interested in getting involved in politics or using his fame or platform for other purposes. And he basically was saying, anything I have to say, I say through the strip and through my characters. And sure enough, that once he was in ill health, he had to announce that he was going to stop drawing the strip. And yes, he made it very clear nobody was going to continue it. But some of your listeners may know, he died within 24 hours of when the last strip was published, as if something almost karmically was at play there. So that's just sort of another sort of mystical, meaningful part of Peanuts lore.
And just briefly, Andrew, do you have a favorite character that you connect with?
You know, sometimes you get that kind of question with other projects, and, oh, I love them the same, and they're all like my children. But no, it's Snoopy forever for
Snoopy
me.
All the way. Andrew, yeah. Thank you so much for joining us. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you very much.
Andrew Blonner is the founder of Blonner Books Literary Agency and editor of several anthologies. We talked with him about his latest book. It's called The Peanuts, Papers, Writers, and Cartoonists on Charlie Brown, Snoopy and the Gang, and the Meaning of Life. Still time to share your favorite Charlie Brown and Snoopy memories, or the other characters. Let us know your favorite. You can do that on the Ideas Network Facebook page. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time.